Welcome to Slow Conversations about Harden Estate. I'm Sarah Helen, Creative Director of many of the businesses here. And in this first series, I'm talking with Charlie Gladstone, one of the current custodians of the estate, about the revitalisation of the West End of Harden Castle. This is Slow Conversations about Harden Estate, episode one. Hi, I'm Sarah Helen, Creative Director of the Harden Estate Businesses. I'm sat here today with Charlie Gladstone.
Hi, Sarah. That is me. We're sitting in the West End of Harden Castle, which is a brand new holiday property. And it's taken us about a year to redecorate and refurbish this place and bring it back to life for the first time for about 100 years, I think. And a lot of people have been asking us about the art and the furniture and the stuff in this place. And we thought it might be interesting to explain a bit of that. But I suppose that before we do that, we should probably talk about the West End and the house itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so we're sat right now in the West Room, which is a beautiful big room overlooking the old castle. And for those of you unsure about the estate generally, the Harden Estate is enriched with history of them, the Gladstone family. Harden Castle sits within 3,500 acres of the Harden Estate, of which some is woodland, residential properties, independent businesses, and farmland. And on the estate, we have two castles, the castle that we're sat in, not one, but two, and the old castle. And yes, perhaps Charlie can tell us a bit more about the castle that we are in at the moment.
Yeah, so this is called the new castle. And that's because relative to the old one, which was built in the 1200s, this is relatively new. This was started in the 1700s. And my family have been here since William Gladstone, the 4 times Prime Minister to Queen Victoria, married Catherine Glynn, whose family lived here. And Caroline and I, my wife and I, have been involved in quite a long process of trying to bring this estate back to life. And in many ways, I think this sort of West End here, which we'll talk about physically more, is the sort of the summation of that. Because in the last, under 20 years, we've built a farm shop. We've bought the pub back and started running that. We have entirely restored the walled garden. We've opened and restored a couple of other holiday properties. We've restored the cricket pavilion that became an event space. We've launched a festival that started out as the Good Life Experience. And I think that our idea is now really that these holiday properties will be places that people can come to and spend an entire week or weekend really on the estate without the need to go elsewhere. They can go to the lake, and which is a beautiful nature reserve, and go swimming, or they can go into a wood-fired sauna, or they can even abseil or learn things in the walled garden about craft. If you can hear some background noise, that is just a cheerful dog wagging her tail. I think we could let her do that, can't we? Because we are pretty dog-friendly here.
She's not allowed on the sofa. Absolutely not. I'm watching you, Mappy.
So, Sarah, just talk to some of the people who are listening about sort of what is below us in this house. Talk about the Temple of Peace.
The Temple of Peace is Prime Minister Gladstone's study and has essentially been almost kept as a time capsule in that it hasn't been, almost hasn't been touched since, you know, he spent time there. It's full of his books and even his stationery on the tables. And it was really his place of refuge, his place for thought. And it's a simply beautiful, beautiful room, enriched with history that you have really worked hard to conserve, just as it was when he was in his leadership role.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, he lay there after he died, draped in the colours of Armenia, before he was moved down to Westminster Abbey for his state funeral.
This place is just enriched with history. Honestly, I've been, working with you, Charlie, for it's about 6 years now, but honestly, I learn new stuff almost every day. It's really quite amazing, this place.
Well, I think there was an inflection point where my father handed over to me on this estate at Harden. And my father was born in 1925, and that was only about 27 years after William Gladstone had died. And I think that having William Gladstone was incredibly famous, and cast still, I think, a very long and inescapable, probably, shadow over my father. And he was an historian, my dad. So he was very interested in preserving, I think, the family legacy, but by looking backwards at history. And I do think that's, of course, that's fantastic, and it's important and noble and all the rest of it. But I think the point at which he handed over to me was the point at which we started looking forwards. And there was a lot of restoration that was needed. I mean, I think that it's always difficult. I don't want to criticise the previous generation, because I love my dad dearly, but I think there was a lot of... The place was quite feudal. It was very private. Most of this house in which we're now sitting was uninhabitable. Certainly uninhabited. No, uninhabitable. And we didn't have the farm shop, and the pub in the village was falling apart, and the cricket pavilion, which is Grade 1 listed, was basically collapsed, and the incredible walled garden was overgrown, and the greenhouses had fallen down. And I think the inflection point came when we started looking... We moved from him looking backwards to me looking forwards. And what I'm really interested in is relevance. And I think to us existing as something which has a relevance in the world today. And for me, that is really through employment and bringing guests onto the estate.
I mean, yeah, there's a couple of things I wanted to draw on there, but what I would say is something you mentioned about taking things forward, and I think by building the businesses on the estate, you know, what you're really doing is future-proofing, isn't it? And you know, you're building what we often talk about ourselves as a very entrepreneurial estate and very creative. But what you've, I mean, even in the last few years that I've been here, so much has kind of been built. And you know, and it makes the estate much more accessible, and I think that's so important. And as you say, the holiday cottages are a way of, you know, inviting people in. So you know, it's such a wonderful thing for you to do, to invite people into your you know, beautiful space, and to share it with people.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is a way of looking forward. I mean, I think there are two things that strike me. I mean, I love this thing of being able to walk around on Harden, and you will bump into someone interesting within a matter of, you know, minutes all the time. And that person might be a member of our team, or they might be a holiday guest, or someone at the farm shop. And I love that, because I think it's that energy that makes us relevant today. And the second thing is that I also am very driven, and again, I don't want to be overly critical, because as I say, and I always qualify this, my dad and I were best friends, but I think that I don't want my children to have this sort of legacy of neglect that I inherited. And I have no idea which of my children will want to take over which of our businesses. There are lots of opportunities, but I think I want them to come and at least feel that the place is rooted in the 21st century. But I think the sort of holiday thing is naturally the final bit of the jigsaw, because, you know, we as I said, you know, 18 years ago, I think it was, we didn't have any of this stuff. And so coming to Harden Estate for a holiday was not really much of a prospect. There are still bits that are very much as they always were. I mean, for example, the lake with its incredible Victorian boathouse has been kept as a sort of nature reserve. We're opening that up to holiday guests exclusively, so no one else can go to that, and except for people who stay in the campsite in the summer. But I mean, I think that's probably a good summation of the estate generally. I think it's slightly distressing to me, but also slightly exciting, that I think I am, of about the 100 of us that there are on the estate, I have a feeling that I'm about the second oldest now. And so that's a great thing, because there's a huge number of you guys in your kind of 30s and 40s that are coming in behind us and our children. But I think there is a real energy here, isn't there?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's interesting you say that, because, you know, as you say, so many years ago, you wouldn't necessarily come to Harden, as, you know, especially not for a holiday. But it's also quite interesting to know that, you know, a few of us in our 30s in the team are all from around here. And, you know, we've kind of, without really thinking about it, like migrated home, you know, having moved to London or, you know, to other kind of cities and, you know, following our dreams, thinking we're not necessarily going to ever find a job at home. And I know me personally, you know, moved to London to, you know, follow my career, found myself at home. And then I find myself in the one of my most creative roles and positions in a business that's so forward thinking. And it's just 20 minutes away from where I grew up. And I just love that because it's not what I was expecting at all. And I love that for our area. I love that for me. And I love that for all. And it's just so happens that that really is quite a similar story to a few of us that work on this team, or a number of us that work on this team. So I think that says a lot, doesn't it, for our, you know, for what you're doing here.
Yeah, it's so nice to hear. I mean, I definitely am. My main skill is as a creative thinker, and I think I'm good at bringing kind of ideas to life. I mean, I would like to think that this is the place that people like yourself would have your most creative job ever, because I understand that with creative people, if you try to tell them how to do things, you're actually knocking a huge amount out of what, you know, out of what they're doing. And so I think we are a very creative space. And one or two people have often said to me that this is the place that your ideas will, you know, literally be able to fly. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's really interesting having this sort of conversation, because I, as you know, am very reticent about, and this is a separate point, about being smug. And when I was a child, I felt really, really uncomfortable growing up here, because I felt like I was the sort of posh boy, and I dressed differently and I spoke differently. And I really found that difficult, because this area had some rough times in the early 80s when the steelworks was closed down. I've really come to grow into the place as I've got older. And that probably, again, was, you know, when my dad handed over to me and I could actually have creative freedom. I mean, I do want to kind of say, whilst recognising that this is a first world problem, that it has been, it's very tough. I mean, it's not easy living in a place like this where, you know, there are leaks and, you know, it needs a new roof and new windows and you know, all of that sort of thing. And, you know, endlessly, there's always something. And a lot of the estate, I felt, was very, very run down. And, you know, we've had to borrow a lot of money to do these projects. And I do feel kind of under constant sort of financial pressure. And this is not, I don't want anyone to get their violins out and play a lament for me, because I'm very, very lucky. But, you know, I think it's important not to come across as sort of too smug. But I mean, I'm interested in, you know, just to kind of, so people can get a flavour of you. I think we try to run a sort of, a relatively non-hierarchical but very well organised business here. And I think that in the last year or two, we've really become organised, because we have this incredible woman, Siobhan, who is helping us with all sorts of things, but came as a financial controller, but has really given us a kind of strong sense of what we're doing. I mean, we do have a substantially disproportionate number of women in the office. I'm intrigued to talk, and I think that, you know, that's brilliant, and we are a very female empowered business, I think. As I say, you know, we're effectively run, well, by me. I'm not a woman, but by Siobhan, who is. But just sort of tell people, because I think it's actually interesting as a human story, tell people about your, you know, what sort of led you here and what you were doing before.
You know, I love telling this story. Not really. So I grew up in Bulkwyn, about 25 minutes from here. I went on to study fashion design. So that's really my background in fashion design. First studying in Leeds, and then went to do a master's in down in Kingston, which I followed by some years working in London for Topman, and then a smaller menswear, British menswear brand called Oliver Spencer. And, you know, during my kind of research, my master's, I did a lot of research and work into discovering, like, craftsmanship, especially kind of Welsh heritage crafts. And I became a real nerd for it, didn't I? And,
yes.
And really kind of embraced just learning about methods of craftsmanship, but also people who make things. So, and that's important to me. And I actually ended up, I lost my job in London and moved home. And actually, I met you via Instagram. And because I was very much kind of, I had my radar on for like, what's going on, you know, what's going on in my, near my, my home. I was kind of, you know, at a point where I was thinking, well, I'm not finding a fashion role up in North Wales, but also it's not really what I wanted to do anymore. I was far more interested in the kind of creative practice or the making or the storytelling, the narrative, and the research. And really, I sent you a message saying, could we go for a coffee? Because I'd had a look at the Good Life Experience and what was going on in Harden. And I could just see that I think that we would connect and that we'd have an interesting conversation. And I'd been working on this thing I was calling Journal, which was about collecting stories of craftspeople across Wales. And as soon as I moved back to Wales, I kind of jumped in my car and went and met lots of different makers. And so, I mean, long story short, we met. I think we instantly kind of got on over really bonding over a love of craft. And a few months later, you'd invited me to come and have a space at the festival, at which time every time we had a festival, it was a huge proportion was of craft and making. So I brought some Welsh makers to the festival. And, you know, then the next year you invited me to have a small kind of tent of makers. And then the year after that, I was running the craft for the festival, you know, managing it with you. And curating the lineup, and that was something I just absolutely kind of adored, getting to know the makers and being able to share those making processes, you know, and skills, you know, with our customers. That's how we first bonded, was a love of craft and, you know, actually like kind of British manufacturing and craftsmanship. Along the way, you helped me to make a magazine where I told stories of about 40 makers across Wales. And then, slowly but surely, I started getting more and more involved in the businesses. It started off with a 2-day-a-week marketing job, which really I wasn't qualified to do at all, but more in the fact that I love, telling stories and, you know, and that kind of thing. But the 2 days a week working at the farm shop in the pub, whilst I was doing some other things, I was doing some teaching. But then 2 days became 3 days, which became 4 days, which then became about 5 days around the time of COVID, actually, when we made some huge, you know, changes across our business.
Wow, yeah, that's absolutely right. And it was indeed, and I think this kind of leads us on very nicely to what we're going to talk about today. It was a love of craft. And I think what I had was a real interest in the provenance of things. And I can feel the soul of a product. I think what you had was more expertise to kind of really understand what had gone into the making, because you're a maker and I'm not a maker. But also I think what you had was the sort of determination to get out there and get people to come in, which I didn't really have the, what the Americans call bandwidth for, to actually really do. But I think the thing that really lit up the Good Life Experience, and indeed Summer Camp, which has followed it, in ways that it really we often forget, was the fact that we really were, I believe, you know, a unique proposition in really encouraging people to come in and show others how to make things. And I think also that Peddlers, the homewares business that I had for 20 odd years, spent, you know, we did lots of things at Peddlers, but one of the things that we did was really try to champion the provenance of things, whether they were, you know, whether it's furniture made in France or vintage items made around the world, or indeed, you know, made in Britain stuff. And I think we were early on the kind of modern, on that modern trend. But I'm definitely someone who, I think like you, well, I don't think like you. I mean, I know that we are both people who will know where every single thing that we wear or have in our house is made. And I mean, clearly there are exceptions, but I mean, I think, you know where that scarf was made, or, you know, your jeans are made. They're probably made by you, but I like that. And I think as we've refined the holiday offer here, we've really lent on what we did at Glendike Abbs and Costures, which is our business in Scotland, which is that if you fill the holiday houses with meaningful stuff, the customers will feel it, even if they don't quite know why it's there or what it is. I think it's a feeling. And we've very much set out our stall at Glendie with that, which, as I say, is our other business in Scotland, where, you know, I felt that if we did holiday houses that had proper furniture and great art and really good kitchenwares, that customers would feel it. And I think that when you go into a restaurant and you pick up a knife and fork, that tells you as much about the quality of the provenance of the place as the thing on the menu saying, well, this is a, you know, a hand-reared chicken from, you know, from the local area. And I think both are really important, but you know, you can feel that. And I think that in all of our houses, you can feel that. And in many ways, no more so than in the West End, because what we have done in redesigning this space, and it's been done entirely by Caroline, my wife, and I, is really try and make it an extension of our house, which sits literally next door. And the way that we work together is that Caroline does all of the colours and the kitchens and the light fittings and the bathroom stuff. And she's and the curtains, and she's really good at that, brilliant at that. And then I do all of the furniture and stuff and art. And in the early, through our early guests in the West End, we've realised that, you know, people would like to find out more about that. And so in the second chapter of our conversation, I think we should start by talking about some of the rooms. How does that sound?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I think we're onto a nice segue there.